Repeat after me to attain your goals. Happiness, a college education, a good job, a healthy family, respect for your neighbors, retirement, happiness. Repeat after me to attain your goals. Happiness.
Ignorance.
A college education.
Mental programming.
A good job.
Slavery.
A healthy family.
Corporate control.
Respect for your neighbors.
Governmental abuses.
Retirement.
Obey.
Happiness.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am. Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am. Sofa King.
Faster.
I am.
Sofa King. No, not so fast.
So.
Loses meaning.
I am. Sofa King.
With retard. You say funny things.
Well, howdy do, neighbors.
Howdy ho.
I miss whiskey today. Pretty bad.
Yeah. You know, that's what every alcoholic says when they haven't had a drink in a while.
I wish I would have put it in an envelope and sealed it. I was like, I thought to myself, I was like, I'm going to comment on the fact that I miss whiskey and Brad's going to call me an alcoholic.
Hey, you are what you are. We can't beat, you know, just got to go with it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's fine. I'm going with it. It's all right. I'm trying to clear this watch. Does anyone have a Yucateco story today?
I have a Yucateco story.
Go for it. I finally tried Dave's popcorn thing though.
Oh,
I hadn't tried that.
Well, your dick in the bucket with Yucateco?
Yeah, it's beautiful. putting red teco on popcorn. My family made popcorn last week and I grabbed like a small portion just to be like, all right, I'm gonna fucking try this. But I kept thinking it was gonna be messy. But it's
like
crazy.
Butter.
It jumps into the little pockets. Yeah. It just red spots come up, but it goes right in there and doesn't get on your hands. So it was good. I like it. I'm gonna try some other flavors. What was your story?
Well, I actually started in that very position because I was in class and one of my students was talking about eating popcorn. We watched some movies. They were supposed to watch movies that we were going to talk about in class. We didn't watch them in class, but they were talking about popcorn that they ate while they watched the movie. And one cat that's in the class was saying that he makes popcorn and he puts like a half a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos in with the popcorn and then eats them combined.
Sounds healthy as fuck.
Yeah, doesn't it? And I said, that's, you know, bullshit. You need to just put hot sauce directly on the popcorn and skip it. Like if you're going to go hot, go hot. And then one of them said, oh, what do you put on? Red ketchup, and named another brand. And I was like, hell no. I put on El Yucateco.
Said hot sauce, bitch.
Yeah. And one of them in the class said El Yucateco and like hadn't heard of it. And at that very moment, I realized that the campus was really hot that week. They're like, it was that day that a weird storm came in and it was like super, super muggy and it never gets humid. It never gets muggy here. And they had the heat kicked on, but it was like 80 degrees outside plus humid. And it was just fucking nasty out. And then the next day I knew it was still going to be wretched on campus. So I just had like an unbuttoned short sleeve shirt with a t-shirt on underneath it. And as I said El Yucateco, I realized I was wearing my El Yucateco t-shirt. So when she said El Yucateco, I just went shabam and actually said shabam and opened my t-shirt up. So there was the El Yucateco logo on my shirt. They were. The entire class was like, what the fuck? I was like, they're my sponsor. And then they all laughed and said, yeah, they're your sponsor. And then I team teach with a friend of mine named Reggie. And he was like, no, actually they are his sponsor. And I didn't go into any more detail than that, but they were like, what the fuck? Like, he has a sponsor for his class?
Hot sauce? A black white guy with red hair? Yeah, hot sauce sponsor?
Exactly. But just as she said El Yucateco, I was like, just some line of code entered my brain and it was like, you're currently wearing your El Yucateco shirt.
That's funny,
so I thought that was a pretty good El Yucateco moment.
That's pretty good.
I did decide that if I needed to, I could probably be vegetarian because I found one meal that I love. I told Dave about it. My wife made rice with black beans and I decided to put hummus in it.
Well, it's got to be black beans.
That's because that's my favorite kind of beans.
Yeah, black beans. If I have the option between brown beans and black beans, I go black.
Yeah, I love black.
Because once you go black, you don't go back.
I could probably eat like a 32-ounce can of black beans just straight out of the
can.
Good.
They have better flavor. They have better flavor. They honestly do.
Maybe a little bit of salt. But I, so it was rice and black beans, and I was sitting there thinking like, damn, there's no meat in this. Like, and then I put hummus on it, and then I put XXX all over it and stirred it up. I swear to God, I could eat that fucking every day for the rest of my life. And I think I'd be fine. Does that have everything
until the rest of your life comes and you're like,
I don't get tired of shit. Else. I might have found my
drug. As far as protein goes, you have a complete protein.
For like 4 years at my grandma's house, she would say, hey, what do you want from the grocery store? I would be like rye bread, ham, mustard, mayo, cheese, and apple juice and nacho cheese Doritos.
Yeah.
And so every all I would day. Drink was like, yeah, I would have like either a glass of apple juice or a glass of milk. Like two ham sandwiches on rye and a bunch of Doritos. I ate that shit for fucking ever.
Yeah. I think I could do that. And then I'm a week in and I'm like, oh God, like I don't want to see that shit for
the only time that happens is when we try to go to fast food and I'm like, where do you guys want to go?
Well, fast food always happens.
Yeah. And I'm like, something different.
Like even like pizza. Like I like pizza. I don't know who doesn't. Well, actually some people don't, but they're weird and they should probably die.
Yeah.
But, I like pizza and I'm like, damn. And I get a good pizza and I'm like, damn, I could eat this like every day. And then like the next day comes along, I'm like, I want pizza again for whatever reason. I have a craving for pizza. And then day three comes along. I'm like, anything but pizza.
No way.
I would never
say no to pizza. Breakfast, lunch, and fucking dinner. There's no way.
I always wonder if you never got that
satiation and the feeling of like being full. Like if somehow, like, I don't know, without being gross and it falling out of your stomach into a bucket or something. If somehow you never got full, how long would you sit there and eat pizza before you quit? Would your jaw just get tired? You know Probably. What I mean? Like, because
you could keep eating it.
Yeah. Like right. I always go like, damn, I want another piece of pizza, but I am fucking stuffed. But if you weren't full, like if it just somehow went away to nowhere and it was just this fucking pleasure fest in
just
your mouth,
the taste of,
you would just keep eating it until you got like tired or something. Literally your jaw would get tired from chewing. I think that's what would stop you.
Probably.
So. Yeah.
That's
so now you need to make black bean hummus to put in your ring. And then
The farmer's market here has a bunch of good hummus. That crazy guy has all kinds of weird, like olive hummus. And
it's a special sauce
hummus. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, he does.
I don't care what's in it. It's
jalapenos
good.
Jalapenos hummus. It's
yeah, I can eat hummus with
not tahini.
I wish he has tahini too, though.
Mm,
yeah, have you not bought the hummus from the hummus guy at the farmer's market? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that shit.
Stop talking about hummus.
That's my favorite thing now.
Gross.
I love
especially
it.
Especially because he hasn't eaten in seven. Yeah,
I don't know. We're talking about food and it's fucking me up, Brent.
What else sounds good?
Everything, dude. I'll eat a chocolate pork chop right now. I don't give a fuck.
A chocolate pork chop.
Speaking of chocolate pork chops, our topic today is Hugh Hefner.
Man, he's a pimp. He is such a pimp.
I was thinking about Hugh Hefner in context as I was doing the research on Hugh Hefner, and I realized that for people our age, like Hefner means something different than I think he does for younger people.
For sure.
Because like, I mean, when I was growing up, it was like Hefner at his peak and it was like classiness and style and like there were certain things
now
associated
like
with
it. Creepy old man in a bathroom.
It was artsy, like
avant-garde and pushing boundaries and now it's like the creepy old man.
It was revolutionary.
Yeah. So I was realizing that like I think a lot of people like when we talk about Hugh Hefner might be like, I did not fucking know that about Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, I said that before. When we got here and met up to record, I didn't know half or three quarters of the shit that I learned.
We were the
on
younger guys that
Hugh
were
Hefner.
Oh yeah, Naked Chicks magazine.
Yeah,
Rich as Fuck,
honestly,
Playboy Mansion parties.
That's exactly right. I'm thinking, you know, they have the stupid ass TV shows on MTV now.
Right,
it's fucking. I knew that he started that sort of magazine. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like and. That's kind of it. Like, you know of Hugh Hefner, like you said, that you see today.
Right.
And as I researched it and watched documentaries and read shit about him, I'm like, damn, he actually was somebody who made a difference.
Massive difference. But I mean, he
doesn't get the credit.
No.
As... You know, he probably got
like attacked and persecuted while he was trying to do good stuff.
Which that's what would have happened in the time. I mean, Martin Luther King was assassinated. You know what I mean? Like there's anybody who tries to do some revolutionary shit.
That was all at that time.
That shit happens.
JFK got assassinated while fucking he was in trial for obscenity or whatever. Like,
yeah. Oh, and Hugh Hefner was?
Yeah, so, while that trial was going on, and right a week before the verdict was JFK's assassination.
Wow. Yeah, so that's
crazy.
And yeah, the crazy thing is not only did he look at the laws of sex differently, I mean, and I tried to find like, oh, I'm going to look back at what were the sex laws back in the day?
Right.
Like, because they kept saying like, most of us would be in jail right now.
Because
if you knew the laws,
yeah.
And like there was shit, like there is some crazy ass shit that's like, if you're not in missionary position, it's illegal.
Right.
Well, you have to think about too, how like TV at the time portrayed it. They had like His and Her Beds.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. I Love Lucy, all absolutely. Those shows, His and Her Beds.
Yeah.
And the thing was, that wasn't really happening.
No.
That was some Hollywood made up picture of how they think it should be.
Well, and it was the government trying to control what people saw and how they wanted them to be.
Yeah. Like, so he didn't turn society into some sex crazy thing. He just got people to come out and say, yeah, we fuck every night in the same bed.
Right.
Like, we're not in His and Her Beds.
But it's not necessarily in the missionary position either.
Yeah. He's easily one of the most influential figures in American culture in the last 100 years.
Like,
he impacted American, if not global culture, he impacted culture more than just about anybody I can think of.
Well, and I was saying
radical ways.
I was surprised to learn that because of his show that he had, you know, he actually, you know, obviously got famous enough to have his own TV show.
Two of them.
Yeah. But the first one that he had was, you know, it was a variety show, you know, he had tons of people on there and this was a time that, black people and white people together was not a thing.
No,
you don't have a black man standing next to a white woman or another white man
on TV
singing together in a group. You know what I mean? So, Hugh Hefner brought jazz and put it in a big light and actually brung jazz mainstream. I mean, people like Sammy Davis Jr., who probably would have never had the chance that he had, came from being on a show with Hugh Hefner.
Right.
You know, and people actually got to see who he was.
Miles Davis.
Yeah.
There was Franklin. She said that was the first time that she didn't have to enter through the kitchen to sing in front of a white audience.
Right.
Yeah.
She actually credits her opportunity as the first time singing in front of a white crowd.
Yeah.
Right.
And because this was a nationally syndicated show.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when they went to televise the show, they said, hey, all the Southern states are going to pull the show.
Yeah.
He's all, fuck them. If they pull it. And he just moved forward.
Yep.
I have to say, if you get a chance and you have the time, I don't know if you can find it if you don't have Amazon Prime, but Amazon Prime has it's Hugh Hefner, American Playboy is the name of the show.
I thought it was Netflix.
I wish it was Netflix. It was Amazon Prime, and I had to jump through 15 hoops because you can't cast it. I had to watch it on my iMac.
What the fuck?
And it's 10 fucking hours. I watched it all.
Holy shit.
But it's good. I was doing the fast. And I was trying to keep my mind off it. I got hooked. But I just sat there, and I watched it from 4 o'clock yesterday to like 11 o'clock at night, and I woke up and finished the last episode this morning. But it's good. It's a dramatization, but they stop and interview his daughter, his son, his ex-wife, his other ex-wife, his other ex-wife,
old girlfriends and shit.
But then they move into the show like it's a real show, like a drama. Dramatization. They do such a good job, and then they jump out and he actually talks about what went down and how he remembered it, and it's really well done. Our friend Alan he showed me the show, so I have to thank him because I'm super glad I watched it. It was really interesting. Even if like you're not into this, like you'd fucking
that's one of the things that I want to point out is I was surprised at the history, at what you learn. I thought I was going to go into this like, oh, it's Hugh Hefner. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be a bunch of titties and ass, you know, and
he's got money, he's got bitches.
He's got money. He started the magazine, got lucky, and, you know, and it became this thing that he pushed the envelope with. Not only did he push the envelope with nudity in a magazine, the articles that he posted in the magazine were some of the most prominent writers were writing for Hugh Hefner in Playboy.
Yeah. Some of the most politically charged, anti-war.
Yeah. So like back in the day, if you said, no, I'm reading this magazine for the articles, you probably were. You're looking at some good art pieces.
I thought about that so much because everyone always makes the joke, it's for the articles,
but it really fucking was.
It really was for the articles.
Yeah. If you look back at some of the articles in old Playboy, they are historic writing.
Oh, yeah. It's nice that the centerfold came out in the middle of that, I'm sure.
Well, and that's what drew people to the magazine. Sure. I mean, that was smart advertisement, but it wasn't smutty either. it was artsy.
Yeah.
And he even says that that's what he wanted to keep it as.
Right.
And he kept it respectable, and it wasn't legs spread, you know, just fucking here's my vagina. You know, it was, you know, well, the woman's the body is beautiful.
I mean, porno magazines existed well before Hugh Hefner, yeah. and that's yeah. not what, that's not what he was.
This was a gentleman's magazine.
Yeah. He had dreamed about working at Esquire is what it was, because they had a pinup girl of the month.
Right.
And he, eventually got that job at Esquire.
Well, let's start at the start and get to Esquire. So Hugh Hefner, just to like break down the background, he was born in Chicago, and for the longest time he would toggle back and forth between Chicago and LA. I think Playboy headquarters was always in Chicago, and he would fly out to LA just because that's where it was happening. But he was the eldest of two sons to Grace and Glenn Hefner, like just like middle class Methodist, like middle America, like just like prototypical American family, but highly religious.
Had two separate beds. They only did missionary
position.
Whole
thing.
I only did that three times.
Three times.
That's right. Yeah. They went at the high school he was at. Reportedly, everybody knew he was really bright, but he wasn't that academically engaged. One thing that I read said that he had an IQ of 152.
Damn.
But his performance academically was pretty low because he didn't care. But he was like super popular.
That's double George Bush, just for the record.
Right.
Twice.
He was, you know, in student government, like did the whole thing. Like he was like a super, super popular person. He founded a school newspaper, and then he also did a comic book that he called School Daze, spelled D-A-Z-E, which was about like a youngster who got in trouble all the time or
something.
He
drew cartoons from a young age.
Yeah. And that's why cartoons were a big part of Playboy as well. Like there were always like racy cartoons.
Well, that was kind of his dream. He wanted to be a kind of a comic artist. You know,
like, and
it's funny. I remember like stealing Dad's Playboy and like the cartoons in there. Like that stands out. I remember.
Yeah,
like,
they do stand out.
There was naked cartoons.
So once he grows up, he ends up joining the army, and it's at the end of World War II. I think he was in there from 44 to 46, but he was a writer in the army. He was a non-combatant. So he was a writer in the army. And then when he got out, he finally went to college, and even the college he went to was legit. He ended up going to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, which is like a legit, university. And he studies, psychology, and he studies sexuality at college, which so he goes from like wanting to do publishing in high school and then even in the military, and then he starts studying sex when he's in college. And apparently he even studied under some guy named Kinsey. I'm trying to find his first name. Alfred Kinsey. Did you see anything
there was,
about
that? I saw that there was a book that came out. He said changed his whole life. And it was like the sexuality of a man.
Sexual behavior in the human male.
There you go.
So this guy named Alfred Kinsey was like one of the known like sexologists, I guess, in the world. And he wrote all this stuff. He came up with a thing called the Kinsey scale, which was a scale between 0 and 6. And it was really, he really came up with the first time that people coined the term of being bisexual. Cause this on the Kinsey scale, if you're 0, you're only attracted to members of the opposite sex 100%. And if you're a 6, you're only attracted to people of the same sex 100%. And if you're a 3, you're truly bisexual in the middle.
Yeah.
But so he's studying under one of the biggest like people who studies sex in America. And he's interested in journalism, and I think it all starts to kind of tie together for him.
What's that weird little sex doctor name, the little woman that has the weird voice? I cannot think of it.
Dr. Ruth West.
Ruth.
There you go. Dr. Ruth.
Yeah. Annoying as fuck.
Yeah, she was.
She was so weird. It was so awkward to hear her talk about crazy shit.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't give a fuck.
Put the dick down my throat.
That was an actual recording.
Yeah.
That was. Yeah, that was a
dub that in.
That was a sample. But after all this, so he's studying sex, he's doing all this stuff, and then he gets a job at Esquire, which he wanted because, again, it was a men's lifestyle magazine. It had a pinup girl, and it sort of showed men how they should be living their life and so forth. And this was
Has some sort of appeal to it, you know, like a draw, you know.
Yeah. And he ends up getting a job in Chicago at Esquire.
That's afterward. Doesn't he work for like a child's magazine or a child's book place first? And he's working.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, he's working. He's actually working at a child's I think it was a magazine or something like that, that he did kids stuff with
Highlights.
At night. Yeah. Yeah. So he would do that during the day. And then at night he was working on Playboy, like trying to come up, because they said, he kind of hit like a pinnacle of his life where he went and stood on a bridge and stared at the water and was like, is this it? Like, am I going to live this life that my parents lived? You know, is this all there is?
That was probably after Esquire.
Maybe
because he was in Chicago with Esquire and he got in a big
argument with him very long.
He got in an argument with him because he wanted a $5 a month raise and they refused to give it to him. And he told him to fuck off and he moved to New York with like nothing but dreams.
Yeah. So then he must have. Yeah.
So that was probably when he was.
Yeah.
In New York.
So he probably got a job. And so he's like, damn, is this it? You know? And so
he was
right
married,
after that.
So his wife was working as well too.
I think. Yeah. And right after that,
his first wife.
Right after that moment, he started working on Playboy, which wasn't originally called Playboy. It was called Stag
Party. Horrible. Wouldn't have
good
quite
thing.
Had the,
yeah. And he said, good thing. Cause that name was already taken. He got a cease and desist letter from Stag. So,
so when he starts Playboy, he's in New York and his whole thing is he wants, men's style magazine that goes beyond anything Esquire did. And he wants to have, and again, and it's not like you look at certain people who like get into like publishing pornography and so forth. And we could debate all day whether this is pornography or whether it's art or whether it's something in the middle or whatever, who gives a shit.
I think Gene Simmons, who was actually in one of the interviews I saw, he makes a good point. You go to an art museum and you see a portrait of a naked lady and it's art. You know what
it's
I mean?
Setting.
Somebody, the setting. And I think especially in the early days, maybe not so much
anymore.
There's
definitely some dirty Playboys.
I mean, people are definitely using it to masturbate, but it serves more.
Yeah.
But
I think the way that they cast the photos and the way that they looked at them, they were looking at them as art, you know?
Yeah.
Some
if
people
he
are going to look
Marilyn
at it.
Marilyn Monroe in the first edition, no one's buying his fucking cool, like Men's Life magazine.
And that was part of the key. So he ends up raising $8,000 from 45 investors. Yeah. So it's not like it was that wealthy guy.
These are friends and family.
Yeah.
He goes to two different banks and they give him $600.
Right. So he ends up getting $8,000 together. He buys one nude photo of Marilyn Monroe.
Did you see the story about how that went down?
Uh-uh.
So he was sitting there like the only way you could get nude photos at that time was there was calendars that had like nudie girls. And so it wasn't even original. It was like you were going to buy something that had already been published in the calendar. So they looked at all these pictures and they were just like, none of them, none of them, none of them. We need something else. And he was being like Steve Jobs picky about this shit. And the guy's like, we have to pick one. And he's like, none of these are it. And then he was sitting down reading the newspaper and it says Chicago Tribune something editor owns rights to Marilyn Monroe's nude photos. Yeah. And he was like,
and
shit,
nobody's seen this photo either.
He's like, it's right down the street.
Right.
It had been rumored and stuff, but no one had actually really seen it. So he has $1,000 left from the investment and he just thinks to himself, fuck, I hope it's enough. So he goes down there and walks in and says, hey, I'm here. I'm interested in buying some photos, the rights to some photos that you have. And he's like, okay, what is it? He's like, it's Marilyn. And he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's like, people pay me just to look at those photos. He's like, fuck, dude, I got $1,000. And he's like, I've had tons of offers. He's like, we're talking about Marilyn Monroe. Because at the time, she was super popular.
And this is 1953.
She had just done a couple big movies. Like, she's blowing up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be like if you had some famous, like, if you had, well, I don't know, everybody leaks their pictures through fucking iPhoto now.
There's
you get anyone now.
Right.
But he's sitting there and the guy's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's like, I don't know, man. I wouldn't be able to sell for any less than 600. And he's just like, man, that's a lot of money. Like, walks around, looks away.
Would you take five?
Deliberates. Yeah. He says, that's exactly what happened. He said, would you take five? And the guy's like, it's a deal. And he shakes his fucking hand and he's like walking through the fucking street going, holy shit, I have the most like famous,
sought after picture
in the world.
And only a $500. Only a select few had seen that photo. Like, that's what's crazy
funny
about this.
The photographer was so nervous during the photo shoot that he forgot to like switch shit and a bunch of the photos were like double exposed. So it was like mutant titties, like it was like crisscross Marilyn Monroe.
What was the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie? Total Recall. She had three titties.
So he ends up putting this thing together. They tell him not to use Stag Party because it's already taken, which is good.
And they had less than a week to edit that. And we're talking X-Acto knife and fucking scotch tape.
Oh, yeah.
They had to recut out any place that said it because they couldn't retype, but they would recut it out any instance that it said Stag and move all that fucking shit around.
All that old school copy shit.
And so instead of the bunny, it had like a fucking dude with like horns and shit. Like
one of the guys they interviewed said, like an editor, he was like, even with modern day fucking computers and stuff, he's like, it would be an undertaking to completely redo a magazine
in a week.
And change in the week. And change all that in 1 week. And they did it with fucking scissors.
Yeah, because you got to think, they probably wrote about it. They talked about Stag and the articles and this and that.
Oh, yeah. Fucking everything.
They had to change the Stag head on the dude to a bunny. Everything.
And so, a friend recommended Playboy and he liked the sound of it because he thought it sounded classier, which it does.
And it was because his mom used to work at the car company called Playboy Cars.
Right.
Yeah. Which is cool. I didn't know it existed. I'm surprised there wasn't some legality there. Like, hey, you stole our fucking name for your magazine.
Yeah, but there's no magazine though. You know what I mean? It's two different things. Yeah.
So
apparently Stag was popular during the day.
That's right. So he puts it together, out of his house. He releases it in December of 1953. And apparently the first issue doesn't even have a date on it because they didn't know they were even going to have the money to make a second one.
He lacked the confidence. Yeah. He was like, I'm not sure how this is going to go. I don't want to put my name on it. I don't want to even put an issue on it because we'll just see what happens. Right. Yeah.
But then it sells 50,000 copies.
Yeah, they put out 70,000 and I think it sold 56,000 copies or something, which is insane.
Like it just fucking blew up. Nobody was expecting it and it did huge. And I don't know why they weren't expecting it. Like back in the day, there's no internet.
And Marilyn Monroe.
There's nothing out there. You've got a picture of Marilyn Monroe. Like
Hugh Hefner literally went to like train stations and shit and walked around fucking like news carts just watching to see if people were picking it up or not.
Right.
Because he was so excited. Right. Like just waiting to see.
So it blows up and it does well. And then he starts to put out more episodes because he's obviously getting capital. And then this starts to show like this is where people will sort of argue about Hugh Hefner, what his intentions were, what he did, etc. So
his intentions were to make money.
Well, his intentions obviously were to make money
right off the bat.
But one of the goals of Playboy is that he said that he thought that other men's magazines were either about outdoorsmen or like people being macho or whatever.
And he wanted cars or something.
Right. He wanted something that was for like sophisticated urban gentlemen, which was a category that kind of didn't exist.
Right.
Right. So if you're looking at like some Mad Men, Don Draper shit of people who are handsome and wearing a suit and drinking at the office and all that stuff, like he helped.
That's a demographic with money too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is a demographic with money. And it's a demographic that he helps define and then appeal to, right? So all the way through up until about 1960, he keeps writing editorials that are in Playboy where he promoted what he calls the Playboy philosophy. And he's talking about, you know, all this different stuff, human sexuality, free enterprise. And one of the big things is he wants to push the boundaries and change the system. He does not like the religious leanings on what people think about sex.
Yeah.
And even though a lot of people make the argument that he was harming feminism by objectifying women in his magazine, his counter argument was the exact opposite. He said, I'm empowering women and I'm letting their sexuality be known. I'm letting them control their own sexuality. I'm letting women not be afraid of their own bodies anymore. And I'm putting sex in the forefront.
And I feel like his true intent from the heart was there. And I think he meant that and he believed that.
Yeah.
Even though like he wasn't catching on to some of the feminist like points of views. Like he went head to head on some talk shows with those bitches. Like, and they were crazy mean. Like,
and I don't know. I watched, like I said, in one of the documentaries, they had some feminist activists and some guys that were like social activists. And they were talking, basically saying that, you know, that magazine just looks, you know, makes women look bad and blah, 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 blah. And and gives you the idea that that's the perfect woman or whatever, you know. And I'm thinking they're looking at these people. I'm like, well, you're mad because you're ugly and you're ugly, and you know what, you're a retarded looking bald guy, and you're not okay with
you're not,
it.
You're like, not the playboy. You know what? One of those girls made a really good point, though, and I realized I just called feminist bitches a second
ago.
Yeah,
you did.
That shit's coming back.
I got that
but
right.
Oh, well. I'm gonna.
You are what you are.
That was a figure speech.
You are what you eat.
They were acting kind of crazy, but she did say, "I'll let it go the minute you come out on stage with a bunny tail on your ass." And then he was just like, put his pipe in his mouth like, that ain't happening. And I was like, yeah, that's true. You're not coming out here.
I mean, I can't,
but that's not the look, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, I think it,
I can
don't
see
know.
Where it's degrading.
I mean, I can't disavow those arguments. I mean, you are objectifying women. You're
but
putting
these women
in a magazine.
He's not,
you're
they're
selling
willing
them.
To do it. It's yeah. their choice. You know,
yeah,
people,
they're
there's
wanting
audience
to.
For it.
Sure. They're in line for it. You know what I mean? That's like, oh, you're making me look stupid throwing pies at my face. Well, you got in line for me to throw a pie at your face.
Well, I mean,
you know
but
what I mean?
I mean, the same argument is said today about straight up 100% porno
yeah.
is that the women have a choice, but then a lot of people are like, do they really if they're economically disadvantaged and there isn't much going on? And does it still objectify women? Yes, it does.
I know a lot of women who do.
I mean,
go
it
into
makes
porn.
Women look like objects that are just there for sexual pleasure. I mean, I can't.
Yeah,
that argument
I mean,
now.
Obviously, I mean, there's people that are making the stuff, and there's right. people that are liking the stuff, right? Yeah. But did the people making the stuff somehow corrupt the people that like the stuff? Like, if all of a sudden you start putting pictures of magazines that have spark plugs in their butt and they're holding wrenches, did you create yeah. a new genre? And they're like,
no, that's
oh,
already
yeah,
there.
Spark
that's already
plugs.
Out there.
Well, you know like, what I'm saying? Though, where's yeah. the line? Because then all of a sudden, it's
no,
like,
you're yeah. right. And I mean, you know, that's all debatable. But one of the things Hugh Hefner went after, and I mentioned earlier, was the sex laws, like the laws. And I came upon a list that somebody had that these are still around today that are laws in different states. So Cleveland, Ohio, women are not allowed to wear patent leather shoes. The reason why is because the reflective surface will enable others to see their panties.
On leather shoes?
That's a law. This is a fucking law.
Damn, who polished that shit?
Yeah, shiny yeah. leather shoes. They can't wear shiny leather shoes. So Virginia, fornication is still forbidden under the code of Virginia section 18.2.344, whatever, fucking blah, 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 blah. And then oral sex is considered a crime against nature.
Still today?
Today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you are performing, if you're having any fornication and you're having oral sex, you are a criminal.
Right.
Sir or madam. Arizona, you can't have more than two sex toys in your home.
What the
fuck? That makes sense.
Who's regulating that?
Arizona?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know that these laws are enforced, but I mean, I guess if they searched your house and they're like, shit, you got three dildos, you're going to have to go to jail.
It's the dildo police.
Yeah.
Somebody went overboard with like garden gnomes and dildos in their flower bed. And they're like, we got to make a law.
So,
sir, yes. Are those three pocket pussies in your bedroom?
Why do you need three, sir? I think, are you cheating on the other one? Yeah. That is a sin. Yeah. So in North Carolina, you can't watch porno. While you're having sex with your wife, and you must stay in the missionary position.
That makes sense.
That's
and
the most ridiculous law.
And
no enforcement of that whatsoever.
And the shades must be drawn.
No, the shades.
Oh, I'm excited on that one. So,
well, no, so, and these are. I mean, these are the types of things that Hefner was fighting against and pushing back against, and so forth.
What about this one, though? He didn't get this one. So, a man is prohibited from shooting a gun while his partner is having an orgasm. That's in Wisconsin.
Well, someone did that shit.
Okay, I'm gonna support that one. That's a law.
Yeah, but why does that even have to be a law?
That's
like,
a
that's
law.
Just a,
I can
a fucking
because yeah. some guy kept doing it.
What about yeah, exactly. what about this one? And everybody knows I hate Utah now. So a woman cannot have sex in an ambulance. That's a law. I don't know what's happening there. And in Alabama, a man is fine, but apparently a woman can't use sex to pay off bets on matches they're playing at pool halls.
It's literally shit that went down, and then they're like, oh, shit, we can't get them.
Yeah, just
we'll get
local,
you next time,
yeah, some local person made a fucking yeah. law. But so, and I was, there's a book that was released by Oxford University Press called Playboy and the Making of the Good Life in Modern America. It was written by a woman named Elizabeth Fratterigo, who's like a professor at Loyola University. And she argues about the difference that Hugh Hefner made in culture. And, yeah. she talks about the fact that, you know, like she says, like 2/3 of the magazine was Hefner telling people how to be like a sophisticated gentleman,
right,
like what to dress, what drinks to order, what jazz to listen to, like a truly a lifestyle,
how to make a
magazine.
Martini.
Like yeah. This is what it was. Mm-hmm. But then one of the quotes that I read from this that I think gets at this argument about Playboy is she says, quote, "Playboy's distaste for traditional domestic roles, affirmations of women's right to enjoy sex outside of marriage and support for women's reproductive freedom all emboldened Hefner to assert quite seriously that, quote, I was a feminist before there was such a thing as feminism."
Right.
And I think that really gets at one thing that he was doing. He was getting women to enjoy sex outside of, I mean, you talk about the sexual revolution that happened in the 1960s.
For women.
Yeah.
For women's rights.
And
I mean,
the 1960s. His wife actually had an affair on him. Did you see that?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Like right. Like there were, I think they were engaged to be married and they were like at the movies or some shit. And she stormed out and they went to the car and she said, "I had an affair, take me home." But back then in that time, he just said, "I love you" through it and fucking just married her anyway.
Yeah, because he had one too. So it's
right. Like, yeah.
At that point, he did.
No, at that point, he didn't. That
still
was
like
his high school sweetheart,
yeah,
like the whole thing.
Yeah, he still had the society programming for the time, like grow up, go to school, go to college, get a wife, have kids.
But yeah, I mean, people talk about the sexual revolution that took place in the 60s where free love happened and sexuality became a big thing. And I think it's really hard to underestimate the role that Hefner played in that. I mean, he redefined sexuality from the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s.
He fought for the pill to be legal in all 50 states. Like if there was a state where they made the pill illegal, he fought for it to be legal. Right. So yeah, he did. Just a ton of work.
And they spoke to such a large audience. His influence was crazy, you know?
Yeah. And
he also was super picky about advertisers. You see that? Like he held his advertisers to a standard. Like he wouldn't do like most like smut style magazines were like, "Hey, look, we got fucking handcuffs and whatever was going to be in there, you know?"
Right.
And he only would do the classiest stuff. Like it'd be like whiskeys and cigars.
No, and that was it. Like
wines.
I mean, you look at those old Playboys and they were a classy joint. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was what he did. And even like one thing that I was looking at is I was like a lot of people were talking about the impact that Hugh Hefner had on the civil rights movement and people like Jesse Jackson and Jim Brown and all these other like big people that were part of the civil rights movement all come out to say that Hefner did things to advance civil rights and black rights in America that no one else had the power to do or was willing to do. And he ends up, Alex Haley, the guy that wrote Roots, and he ended up writing the autobiography of Malcolm X. Hefner, in I want to say the very first episode, he had Alex Haley interview, one of the first ones anyway, maybe it was after he had more money, but he had Alex Haley interview Miles Davis. And I guess it was so successful that he named Alex Haley as Playboy's chief interrogator. Like that was his official role. So for years, if there was an interview with somebody, Alex Haley, who was a huge black figure, a major literary figure, et cetera, was doing the interviews for Playboy. So he interviewed Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King, all this different
Martin
stuff.
Martin Luther King actually granted him the longest interview like in history. Yeah. Like Martin Luther King gave Playboy like a 25-hour interview. Like
and
all
that,
those interviews.
And it's probably because it was Alex Haley.
They compiled it down to like a four-page
pages.
God damn.
He interviewed George Lincoln Rockwell, who was the leader of the American Nazi Party. Alex Haley did because he was still the guy who did all the interviews. And there's a film clip where he starts rolling to record to start interviewing this fucking white supremacist racist. And he says, "I've been called a nigger before and this time I'm being paid well for it. So go ahead and tell me why you hate us."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was good. That guy. And actually that's the guy who got, he was a part of the NAACP and he actually, they gave Hugh Hefner an award, awarding him for all the social, you know, rights stuff that he did, which he said, that's pretty much unheard of.
There was a really prominent
black
comedian too. I can't think of his name right now, but
I forgot. I remember reading about it, but I forget who it was too.
It was pretty funny. Comedy's so weird how it evolves, man. It's,
So, and the other thing is Alex Haley interviewed Malcolm X a bunch of times for the magazine. And apparently his interviews with Malcolm X for Hugh Hefner are what led him to write the autobiography of Malcolm X, which is like the book about Malcolm
and
X.
And everyone fought against him publishing that because mm-hmm. it was so like Malcolm X. It right. was like, right. hate Whitey. Yeah. We need to have a yeah. riot and beat right. people up. And but, he was like, nope. He's like, if that's how he feels, he's like, it's an interview.
Right.
He's yeah. like, I'm
that's
not.
That's how he feels.
Yeah. And he fucking
it.
Supported
He's yeah. like, publish it. And they were like, he's like, untouched, publish it just like it says.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So he did a lot to push buttons and do all this stuff. And then even once the magazine is really blowing up in the late 60s, early 70s, he starts his Playboy clubs, mm-hmm. right? And we can talk about all the details of the Playboy clubs. But even part of it was like his TV shows and the clubs, like Brad was saying earlier, he's got like on this TV show, like black and white couples standing at a bar together.
Yeah, and that
like,
was
on TV. Yeah. No one did that.
There like, was period. A there was a jazz trio called Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross, mm-hmm. and Ross, I believe, was the black man, and they all sung together. So he had people. I mean, he had Ella Fitzgerald, the Bassy Band, Miles Davis, the trio, tons of like I said, Sammy Davis Jr., tons of comedians, white and black. It wasn't just you know black
pretty,
people, but
and
but
pretty
he
cool
was
because he's a rich white guy and he's supposed to hate black people like right. it was yeah. playing grain right. in but his ass.
Even to the point that he starts these Playboy clubs and they're like private clubs. You have to pay money for a membership every year. But once you get a key to the club, and there were clubs in major cities all over the United States. And once you had a key, you could get into any of yeah. the right. clubs. But apparently some of the clubs in the South, in Miami and in New Orleans yeah. and a couple of other cities, they started to turn away blacks.
Yeah. And it was actually because it was against the law.
Right.
For white people to set with black people.
Right.
So
they start to, turn yeah. things away and they were a franchise. I mean, just like right. a McDonald's or whatever, like someone puts up the money, they run the club, but it's got the Playboy brand. Right. Hefner bought back all the franchises based on clauses in the franchise laws.
I didn't realize it was a franchise.
Yeah, it was a franchise, but he bought them back himself at every club that tried to kick black people out just to make sure that black people could still go into the club.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Like out of his own pocket, like, fuck you. This is what we represent. Like, you're not gonna. And like you said on his TV show, when sponsors were saying, we're going to pull our ad, if you keep, you know, black artists or whatever, yeah. he was like, then pull your fucking
yeah,
ad.
Yeah. He said he wanted the show to reflect the same atmosphere as the clubs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and when he started the Playboy clubs, he got the liquor license and all that stuff. But, because the head of entertainment, he had to have some sort of license for entertainment, for mm-hmm. live entertainment, was they were a Catholic and they weren't in approval of anything Playboy.
Right.
They wouldn't give them the license. So literally people were going into these clubs and just sitting and drinking. There is no music. There is no live entertainment. And he actually had to fight in court to be able to win that. Wow. Entertainment license. So yeah. So everything he did throughout the years was just a battle. Every time, yeah,
everything he did. And then like when we talk about like the magazine itself and the classiness, I just ran into this on my notes. Like, so we have the Alex Haley, Miles Davis interview, and Alex Haley starts running the key interviews that are there. But even looking at fiction, people would publish, their fiction in Playboy, or like the first chapter or a short story based on a novel. And we're talking about fucking Ray Bradbury, Carl Sagan, Kurt Vonnegut, Jack Kerouac, Ian Fleming, who wrote 007, like the biggest authors of the yeah. day, literary figures. They were writing shit for Playboy.
Yeah.
Like, because
and he would run multiple issues would run pieces of those books. He yeah. would run an entire book
yeah.
over
just
multiple
like, yeah,
issues.
Episode, issue after yeah. issue. And there would always be fiction, you know, articles about lifestyle fiction, you know, whatever interviews, like it was all in there. So it wasn't yeah. It wasn't by any means just a smut magazine,
yeah,
of which there were
and,
plenty.
And he had some of the best cartoonists drawing mm-hmm. for him too, mm-hmm. like it set so many people up for success just working with yeah. that magazine. It's insane.
And then once it blew up, he starts to open Playboy hotels and resorts. He opened up modeling agencies that would obviously feed they did recording for the bunnies label, and whatever recording label.
Limousine service.
Yep. The two TV shows. One was Playboy's Penthouse from 1959 to 1960, and then Playboy After Dark from 1969 to 1970. And again, Ella Fitzgerald, Tony Bennett, Milton Berle, James Brown, like the people who were the people in entertainment would be on the show. And the show was, it was filmed as if it was took place in a Playboy club.
Right.
So it looked like a club, and it would just be Hugh Hefner walking around with his famous, you know, smoking jacket on and his pipe, just chatting with people. And all of a sudden, like, oh, who happens to be here today? It's Sammy Davis Jr. And then he'll sit there and interview Sammy Davis Jr. for a couple of minutes and then say, hey, do you feel like playing a song? And he tried to make it look like it wasn't like a setup.
Yeah, it was just improv.
It was just like him hanging out. This is what you get if you come to the club.
And the camera was the visitor.
Right.
The comedians were just like spilling shit. You see that? That was the joke. He was like, whoa, whoa, and like popping a cork on fucking champagne. And the other guy drops the fucking platter. They're like, oh, you're like, God, this comedy was so different.
Yeah,
man.
No, radically
different. Did you see how crazy the training was for the bunnies at the club and how much detail went into the costumes? Like, they made the original costume, some designer, and then he went with scissors and cut shit up and made the costume and like sent her back out. Like, he did it with like tape and scissors and shit. And the girl came back out, and that's what the costume became.
Wow.
And then they did the whole bunny ears thing. But they would have them like doing figure eights through tables and going, hold the tray low, hold the tray high, hold it. And they had like a curtsy, like a very special bunny pose.
I saw that. I
the
saw
way the, they had to hand
the way
drink
they
on
set the drink on the table. Yeah.
Like they would lean back.
It's like the
over.
McDonald's story.
Yeah. And they had to
fucking swing the trays around.
Right. Yeah. They practiced every little aspect. He's like, eye contact. You got the thing down, but no eye contact. Now raise your tray, do this, move that, smile, talk, make sure you're looking at every person at the table, give everyone attention. Like, it was nuts. There was a Playboy bunny handbook, mm-hmm. and it was super strict, dude. There was even a what was called the bunny mother, and there was one like old mean lady that like ran the bunnies, and she made sure like she would walk through and be like, your shoes are dirty, you need to go change, why are your ears always bent? And the girl's like, I didn't know that there was a specific way. She's like, yeah, there's a specific way, it's like this, it's in
right,
the manual,
right?
Like, holy
and again
shit.
Even with the bunnies, like he hired bunnies of like every ethnicity. He would hire white bunnies, black bunnies, Hispanic bunnies, Asian bunnies. Like
600 girls showed up to the first casting call, and they came from all over the United States. There were like 600. They were sitting there at the thing, like 600. And the girl's like, yeah, 600. And they come in, they're like, hi, I'm from fucking New York. I'm from Florida. I'm from Denver. And they were like biologists, doctors and right. shit. So as far as the feminist, you know what I mean? Like, come on, that's a doctor. She wanted to do it. They had aspirations to have that lifestyle of like fantasy and Hollywood.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, right. And then they ended up finding out, they're like, damn, we could, out of 600, they came up with 17 and they needed like 60 or 30 or something. And the girl that was helping with the auditions and run it said, have you thought about just why not have playmates? And they're like, because a playmate's not going to work 8 hours serving drinks. And they're like, a couple of them contacted us and said they wanted to audition, but they weren't sure if it was okay.
Right.
And they're like, what? So it ended up being that like 12 of them were actual playmates at the first
that
club.
Were in the magazine.
Yeah, yeah. They were actually in the magazine. You could meet them, and they were the one opening the door when you walked in the club.
Yeah, it's because they didn't choose. If you were a model or had some sort of modeling background, you probably weren't getting into Playboy.
Right.
Like he specifically chose the girl next door. You know what I mean?
As far as the patron's concerned, that walks into that club, that girl is as famous as any celebrity.
Yeah, that's
and
like
she's
their
opening
fantasy
a door
girl. Yeah.
Or handing you a Jack and Coke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see the thing when he waged war on 7-Eleven because they pulled
no.
So they pulled all of the Playboys from a bunch of retailers, like thousands of retailers, at major chains. And so he took a bunch of 7-Eleven employees and turned them into playmates. And did a whole thing with the 7-Eleven behind
them. Uniforms?
Yeah, with fucking 7-Eleven shirts on and fucking 7-Eleven in the background, like fucking just naked. And
how was that okay though? I wonder how he did.
They fucking
trouble.
Did it. Yeah, that's they funny. Did it. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. If you look it up, I don't know if I could find some photos, but yeah, he pretty much said, "Fuck you guys."
That's like when
you want to pull them off the shelves. Because what happened was they labeled him as Playboy as obscene,
right?
And so they pulled them off the shelves because they were being sold at convenience right. stores. Well, then later on they wrote back and said, because the FBI did this, and later on they wrote a thing saying, no, I didn't mean Playboy. but they specifically labeled Playboy.
Right.
Well, they went to trial.
Yeah. It already did the damage. And so he went back in and said, fuck you guys, here you go. And literally took 7-Eleven employees.
That's funny.
From all over the country.
Because in 1963, he got put on trial for selling obscene literature. That's probably when that happened.
In Chicago specifically, the city of Chicago. Yeah.
And it was because, and specifically they blew it up, I guess, because it included nude photos of Jane Mansfield.
It was because a male picture with her as well.
Yeah, they said it was Jane.
There was a male picture with the naked female, and the wording below said that she was talking about gyrating her hips in the bed or something, and it was just over the top as far as they were concerned.
Wow. Yeah. And they said it was that, but it was really for a different reason. They were just trying to fuck him up, basically.
Right.
Looking for anything that they could. They were reaching.
So, and the jury couldn't reach a verdict, so he ended up being okay in the long run. But then, so that was in 63. In 64, he started the Playboy Foundation, which was there to basically, the Playboy Foundation exists even to this day to fight for free speech, to stop censorship, and to research human sexuality. And so that was kind of, so he's spending money to help research this stuff and do that. And that's his reaction. Like, his reaction is, fuck you, I'm gonna take pictures of naked naked women in 7-Eleven, and then I'm gonna start a foundation that tries to make sure other people don't have their freedom of speech compromised.
Well, the jury was deadlocked and they couldn't come to decision, so he got off.
And they stacked the jury too. It was 11 women who are all of faith, and one male.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the attorney that Hugh hired was Martin Luther King's attorney that got him off for some
Johnny
crazy.
Cochran. Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, Johnny Cochran.
Yeah. Said he must have quit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The glove
didn't fit.
Yeah. That was where that came from.
Yeah.
So he ends up at this point in the 70s, everything's blowing up, and he's spending a lot of time in LA because of TV shows and different, you know, film ventures. And that was when he ends up getting the infamous Playboy Mansion in the early 70s. And apparently he had an airplane called the Big Bunny.
Did you see how he bought the mansion, though? His girlfriend at the time, which they interview her on that thing, you got to watch it on Amazon Prime, but she's looking for a house for him. She hops the fence to that place because it was the only place on Sunset Boulevard that had like a fence and a long drive. It was kind of secluded. So she hops the fence, walks up the drive, and knocks on the door and asks the people that are the current owners, would they be interested in selling it? And they said, possibly. So then he bought it.
Everything has a price.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
And then he built like an underground fucking like...
Well, the grotto.
Grotto thing. And like with fossils in the ceiling and shit.
But so he had an airplane.
A lot of that stuff was there. The cave, you know, the swimming pool, the famous cave, you know, that you can go in.
He built that.
No, it was all there.
I watched the thing on it. He built it. He's like, I made it my own within like a year.
I didn't see that.
This crazy pool that went around.
They made it sound like... Ones that I watched made it sound like it was there already, so...
A lot of stuff was there. That was a fancy ass fucking
it's a fucking castle. It's a 20,000 square foot castle, you know. But yeah, so he has his jet, the Big Bunny, which is a converted DC-30 jet that has a living room, a fucking disco, like a full-on dance floor. It's got a movie theater and a wet bar and multiple bedrooms.
And he painted it black.
This is what he fucking flies around.
He painted it black
in.
Because there was no other black jets in the in the world.
Yeah. So if it landed, you knew what was landing.
Yeah, and it can actually go international, which I guess the regular...
Yeah, it had some special fuel thing that it could go anywhere in the world. Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Well, that was the level of success that he had obviously
They said,
reached.
Like, today it would have cost $32 million or something, I think, for that jet. Yeah.
Yeah. So...
it's a jet, I guess, but it's literally like a passenger. It's what you would go fly on United. He just painted it black, gutted
and
it.
And made it bigger.
Stripper poles in it. Yeah.
So that's kind of a height of Playboy. I know it kind of it slumps in the 1970s because Bob Guccione creates Penthouse, which is like a sleazier version that isn't really, it doesn't have all the lifestyle stuff. Yeah. It's trying to kind of pattern itself after Playboy.
No, it does have
sleazier.
The lifestyle stuff. They modeled it directly after, just like he did Esquire.
It's sort of
like coming full circle because he sort of targeted Esquire and no one had stepped up to it before. And so, that guy makes Penthouse, but he shows bush. Like right. he shows pubic hair and like steps it up to the next level, but he does have some of the lifestyle stuff incorporated. So it actually starts to beat Playboy and sells at one point.
Right. Right.
And then Playboy makes the decision.
That's just the horn dogs
to show pubes in one thing. And it's like this race of like, who's going to step it up, but he kind of sticks to his guns and doesn't
and pretty
do
much.
It.
Yeah. And then Penthouse is full intercourse.
And then at one point, they show a male, they show a penis in Penthouse at some point in time. There's this point where, Playboy has an opportunity to buy Vanessa Williams, nude photos, who was Miss America at the time. And he's presented with the opportunity to do it, similar to the Marilyn Monroe thing. Mm-hmm. She has no control over it. He says no, because he knows it would decrown her, and Penthouse buys it, outsells them by like a million copies, but soon falls short and falls below them again. They get back up.
Right.
But there's so many highs and lows. Like he spread himself out so much. They actually produced Monty Python. Did you know that?
No,
They signed ABBA. Yeah, they signed the band.
Playboy
ABBA.
Did?
Yeah, they were their original record. They signed ABBA. They produced Monty Python, a couple other movies, but he kind of stepped back because it had this new girlfriend. I can't think of her name right now. She was a country singer eventually, but he stepped out of it and spent so much
Carrie
time
Underwood.
With her. It wasn't Carrie Underwood. I can't think of that girl's
name. No, that was her stage name.
Oh,
she was Carrie Underwood.
Garth Brooks.
Yeah, Garth Brooks. That Thunder Rolls.
Yeah,
that's all true. Yeah. So he's traveling around so much, he kind of steps back and gives control like to, you know, some of the executives a little bit and delegates. And then they call him in there. Like, hey, we got a problem. And he's like, we reported a loss. He's like, well, how many magazines did we, you know, how much did we drop in the magazines? They're like, no, the company reported a loss. Like the limo service, the fucking movie production company. So he goes outside and finally brings in like a president from another company to go in, and they KO a bunch of stuff and
Steve Jobs
way like back.
That, yeah. That's when he hired Steve Jobs.
Basically.
But that still goes to shit because like they have casinos. They have four casinos in London. Did you see that?
So I know you had casinos and resorts, but
so a huge thing that happens is they open a club. I think it was in New York, and New York apparently is like huge for being corrupt as fuck as far as like the government.
That's where it started.
So in order to get his liquor license there, he had to pay a judge.
You liquor, you brought her
$150,000 to get his liquor license in New York.
Jesus,
that's the bribe. And he's like, no, I'm not bribing anyone. Like, that's not our thing. Like, we apply for the liquor license. He's like, it's the way it works here. He's like, this is how we have to do it. And finally he breaks and he gives the bribe. And after they open the club, this huge thing comes up where
you need protection.
There's a scandal. No, there's a scandal that happens, and they're investigating the liquor license place and the judge. And he's like, fuck. So he goes and just goes to the DA or whatever and just goes, hey, like, we did this. This is the way it was presented. We did pay this $150 because it was in a fucking check. They're going to get caught. 000. I will cooperate in any fucking way that I can. So they drop all charges. The judge goes to jail for 4 years. They don't get in trouble for it, but it's marred their record for fucking ever.
Wow.
So they have four casinos in London eventually. And his main guy, I can't think of the guy's name, runs those four clubs over there. Well, they become top dog in London and the other casinos don't like it. So they fucking send raids simultaneously. Raids over there and say that they're doing something shady and they're breaking London gambling laws. And so his advisory tells him he has to fire his friend of 30 years because it would show, it would look good.
He's cooperating.
Eyes, yeah, that he's cooperating. He's trying to clean up.
Right.
Even though it looks like an admission of guilt. They've done nothing wrong.
Nothing was wrong. Right. Yeah.
But
they're an international company and somebody else's
and so
land.
He's just doing what they're advising him to do, and it breaks his fucking heart. He never talks to the guy again, never says goodbye. And they were friends for 30 fucking years until this. And the guy's assuring him like, no, there's nothing fucking wrong. We didn't do anything. It's a move from this other casino. So guess what? They lose all those fucking gambling licenses in London, and it was 85% of the company's income. And while they're doing this, they're building a fucking giant hotel and casino in Atlantic City that they have $32 million into.
Tied
and it's
up.
Opening Ooh. And operating on a temporary fucking gambling license that's conditional of if they get approved or not. And then four casinos get shut down in London.
For shady shit.
For shady shit.
That they weren't doing.
Don't get approved. So they literally lose $200 million in like less than a fucking span of months or something.
Fuck.
So he fucking fires the president and makes his daughter president of the company.
Yeah, I saw that he made his daughter president. I didn't know that that was the fucking wind up to that pitch.
And he has like, marriage after
crazy.
Marriage. There's all this crazy. He evolves with every fucking decade and everything changes. When VHS comes out, he goes to TV. When the internet comes out, they go to internet. I mean, he's really good at adapting and not dying. He constantly constantly yep. evolves to the industry, but he overcomes so much. He's such a target. Did you see the thing with his personal assistant, Bobby?
Mm-mm.
So he has this woman named Bobby.
She died, right?
Yeah,
is this the eventually. Drug charges?
She's been his personal assistant for, I don't know, 16 years. And she's like his fucking right hand. She gets shit done. She's actually the one that was interviewing all those bunnies for the thing. So her boyfriend apparently is into drug dealing and she doesn't really know. So she's at the, there's an investigation going on a drug dealer. The drug dealer shows up to Bobby's boyfriend's house. Just coincidentally, she mm-hmm. doesn't know. She's there. She's like, who's this shady guy? And she walks out and says, hi, are you a friend of Bobby's? Like after he came back down, he's like, nah, I got to go or whatever. And she's like, hey, my name's Bobby. Like, are you a friend of my boyfriend's or whatever? And she shakes his hand and they fucking get photos of her shaking that guy's hand.
Oh, fuck.
So they take it to the DA and they're like, who's this? That's the notorious blah, blah, blah. He was at this guy's house. Who's this? Oh, that's Hugh Hefner's right-hand fucking personal assistant. Yeah. And he's like, no
and
shit.
This is so
he tries to make his whole career out of this fucking move.
Yeah. Well, and they're at this exact time, they're investigating Hugh Hefner on drugs.
Like, well, that's the drug. That's why they're investigating that. They put that, they drum up this whole fucking case that she is helping sell drugs in the clubs.
Yeah.
It makes the base for a case.
Oh, I did see something
all
about
the
that.
All of the clubs, the Playboy clubs are just a front to sell like cocaine or something. And so she goes to court and his advisory says, you have to completely distance yourself because he was going to write up this whole fucking thing and go to bat for her. And they're like, you have to distance yourself. She didn't do it. Then it'll figure it out in court. But guess what? They fucking tell the guy, the drug dealer, hey, we'll let you off in 5 years if you say that she carried the coke, she did all this shit,
what the fuck?
They could try to tie Playboy in to make this DA's career.
Yeah.
So the fucking real bad guy goes to jail for 5 years. She gets 15.
Yeah,
13 or 15 years. The boyfriend only gets like fucking 4 years or something. She didn't do shit. She really didn't know. And then she fucking immediately commits suicide.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Hugh Hefner killed her. But then I saw his like speech that he made about her.
He was fucking tore up.
He was wrecked.
A broken man. Yeah.
He was also an advocate for legalizing marijuana. One of the first like mm-hmm. huge public figures to want to legalize marijuana. So he had a huge thing with that, and that's one of the reasons they were after him so much.
He was an advocate for gay marriage, like when no one else was. He was like publicly
he was just more. For if you do what you want to do,
right?
Nobody should be telling
like
you
sexual freedom.
How to fuck your wife.
Yeah.
Nobody should be telling you if who you should have a boyfriend or you can't or whatever. Like nobody should be telling you that you can't stand next to a black man if you don't want to,
right.
Or if you want to, you know. So yeah, so he was more of just this advocate for freedom.
And
I mean, you know what I mean? Like that's all it was, really.
He ends up again, like he ends up giving, he creates a censorship in cinema course at USC. He gives the film school $2 million to help him like encourage like new filmmaking techniques and all this stuff. He creates the annual Freedom of Expression Award, which happens at the Sundance Film Festival for like new up and coming people. He was like one of the main people responsible for the restoration of the Hollywood sign once it went to shit.
Yeah.
He like auctioned off all the letters in Hollywood and like he actually bought one of them himself. And
he rebuilt because, the Hollywood sign.
Because of that, he ended up getting a thing on the Walk of Fame. He's Hall of Fame for American Society of Magazine Editors. He holds 2 Guinness World Records, and they're not for what you would think they would be for.
2 chicks at the same time.
Nope. One of them is for the longest career as an editor-in-chief for the same magazine, and the other one is for having the largest collection of personal scrapbooks.
Oh, wow. Yeah, his scrapbooks are crazy.
Like I said, they weren't what you thought.
Dude, his scrapbook's like literally a foot tall, and it's for like 4 months of his life, but he's done a scrapbook
all of them.
For his entire life for every month, and it's insane.
I bet those end up in some like in the Smithsonian cartoony or something. Yeah. Plastic.
Well, and he did the cartooning on them. So like the front of them looks like kind of like a magazine that he did the cartoon of. Like,
how does he have time to scrapbook?
Other people are running his company now. Right. You know, like that's what he did.
Three hot girls waiting to give him a blowjob. He's like, hold on there.
I got
to
finish the scrapbooking. He's also, he has an endangered rabbit named after him that they discovered.
Dude, you hate on him though. He had a zoo and there's just a monkey on a chain and shit in the tree.
Well, you can't let that monkey run wild.
The rabbit only,
come on.
It only lives in the Florida Keys. Next door.
If it does something wrong, you just spank it. You spank your monkey.
He's famous for that. But
unless it eats an old lady's face, like then that's not good.
Yeah. And then I think the sort of the modern day look at Hugh Hefner started in 2005, which is when E Entertainment Network launched The Girls Next Door. And I think at the time he was in his 80s, because I think he's 91 right now. But he was in his 80s and just hanging out with those three girls and just kicking it and walking around the mansion. And
Holly, Bridget, and Kendra,
Kendra.
He ends up marrying like around that time. He actually gets married and was married for 9 years, has two new kids, and actually becomes the father he always wanted to be. Yeah. Like he didn't spend any time with his original kids because he was busy building the empire.
But his daughter's the president of the company. Yeah, so
he spends time with those kids until they're like nine, and then they realize like we have to get a divorce, and he buys the mansion next to the Playboy mansion, helps pick out wallpaper and shit, and has a completely okay relationship
with
her.
The kids are,
and she lives next door.
One of the things.
That was his second marriage.
Yeah. That's one of the things they said too, that all of his past wife's girlfriends, the current ones, they all just get along because they understand who he is.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so he picked maybe not the right women for the rest of his life, but he picked the right women to understand what he was and what he did, you know, and none of them, you know, held grudges.
Yeah, no one was mad. They all tell nice stories about him, even though he was fucking 70 bitches on the side. Like he literally at least in the dramatization, the country singer girl comes home from like Tennessee and he's just laying in bed. Carrie Underwood comes home from Tennessee and she sees him just in bed with two naked chicks asleep. And she's like, hey, Tina, Susie, can you give me a minute? And they're like, oh yeah, sure. And they just get up and walk out, even though that's like the love of his life. And he's like, hey.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. And then finally he's like, hey, this doesn't have to be a big talk, you know, like, and she, you know, I love you. I never want to hurt you. She's like, it does have to be a big talk. And then she finally leaves, but they were together forever. And she knew that he did that on the side.
Yeah.
I mean,
you kind of have to
kind of be okay with it because
you
want to live that lifestyle, you got to be okay with it. And also you just know, like, he's a fucking dude. How is he going to be in that position and all that thrown at him?
And then he ends up marrying Playboy bunny Crystal Harris, who was she was in the magazine in 2009, I think. And they got married in 2012 on New Year's Eve. And apparently he tweeted Happy New Year from Mr. and Mrs. Hugh Hefner with a picture of himself when he was 86 and his new wife, who is 26.
Ooh. Damn.
That's
that Viagra dick.
Yep.
She fucking grandpa.
Yes,
he has to
sprinkle them on top of his oatmeal, dude.
So apparently, like from what I was reading, his health is supposedly really bad right now. But he's fucking 91.
Yeah.
So I mean, what do you expect? I mean, he's still like. Apparently, they ended up selling the mansion. Like the mansion got put on sale, and like the market price. For apparently it said that everything in the neighborhood, like the comps of the neighborhood, were between $50 and $60 million per house, but that they were trying to get $200 million for this because it was the Playboy Mansion. Yeah. And apparently one of the neighbors who lives nearby bought it for $105 million. His name, and this is his real name, Darren Metropolis. Huh. But it's actually spelled funky because he's a Greek tycoon. It's like M-E anyway. But he's co-owner of Hostess, like Twinkies, etc.
Right. Oh, that's where their money went.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why they went bankrupt.
He bought the mansion with the provision that like he doesn't want to live there. He bought it and said, as long as Hugh Hefner is alive, he'll live in the mansion.
Right.
Like he's just
throwing parties.
Like, why were they trying to sell it for? Just they didn't need it, or
I think it became a corporate thing. I think the company owned the mansion the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think they were trying to downsize. And I don't know why the company would get rid of the Playboy Mansion. Like that's
the draw.
Well, probably if Hugh's not there, you're probably not throwing those parties. Yeah. Like, you know.
And I was looking, there was a thing that was talking about his, apparently he got investigated for something in 2009 and like his financials were made public. And it was talking about how he spent his money every month. And it said that, groceries, household supplies, utilities, and email came to $53,000. Food came to $18,000.
Groceries wasn't food?
Well, that's just for the house and the staff. That's like just people eating on a daily basis. And then food itself was $18,000. We should just.
Well, because he's got the party thing going, it's fine. He's partying, he's feeding those people. Like the celebrities at the time, it was like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sammy Davis. Like every celebrity you can think of is fucking rubbing elbows and he's hosting that party.
Right.
They aren't paying to get into that fucking party.
Yeah. So, I mean, the groceries were $53,000.
And he had a party no matter what it was. It doesn't matter if it's Easter, Christmas, fucking Happy Tuesday, you know, a birthday. If it was a celebrity's birthday, they said that the actors at the time would, they would actually schedule their filming around the Playboy Mansion parties. So Hollywood, all the actors would schedule all of filming schedules around the Playboy Mansion parties.
So they could go to the
parties.
So
that they could attend and they didn't miss. Yeah.
So $53,000 a month just on household shit, $18,000 a month on food, $25,000 a month on entertainment.
Damn.
Like a month.
Yeah.
Nah, like a month. That's why they were trying to shut this thing down.
Like he was spending almost $100,000 a month just on the mansion out of his own money. That's his own money out of his own. That wasn't Playboy fortune. That was Hugh Hefner money. $100,000 a month money, keeping that fucking
obviously
mansion.
Obviously, I wouldn't spend that kind of money because I'm not throwing parties with Schwarzenegger. Nah, but if I was ever super rich, I still feel like I'd be pretty conservative about shit.
You don't know.
I mean,
but the thing is, though, I mean, when
your money's never going to run out.
Well, when your money's never going to run out, but when your money is contingent upon lifestyle. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't have the option of like getting a fucking studio apartment. Like
not having
this
the
is
wine,
the Playboy. Like this is where the stars come. This is where the biggest sports
Sam
stars
Walton's
go. This is the
all the way till the end. Drove a fucking like.
But that's not.
Yeah, but he never had the life.
His business isn't lifestyle.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, Hefner's business life. Is lifestyle. Yeah. He has to be the grandfather of lifestyle. Yeah. He has to be a Playboy, and that costs fucking money.
He wasn't that guy either. They said he invented the image and then became it.
Yeah.
Like he grabbed a pipe. It was like
once he had the money, he started doing it.
Yeah.
Like that's
and it wasn't even necessarily he wanted to do those things. He created the image that he thought a Playboy was. Like, what is a Playboy? And then he conformed and made himself that image.
Yeah.
And then became that.
And
person.
Again, it blows my mind when you look back at that stereotype of a wealthy, successful man in the 1960s and you picture that jet setting. Suit wearing, martini drinking lifestyle, like that's because fucking Hugh Hefner invented it.
Yeah. Like, and that's why he's always in pajamas too now because he got tired of wearing a fucking suit all the
time.
But
I mean, and because he was always at the clubs and whatever. But I mean, the impact he had on culture, on the sexual revolution, on even civil rights, like it's just massive what he pulled off. And obviously, I mean, I'm not going to disagree that there are obvious, strong feminist arguments that can be made against what he did and against the magazine.
This is the thing you have to ask yourself. There has to be a give in some area. You know what I mean? For all the good that he did, there's going to be some negative.
Right. And I mean, the magazines wouldn't have sold and he wouldn't have had that impact if there wasn't skin in them, obviously. I mean, it wouldn't have fucking happened.
It's still to this day.
Yeah.
To this day is the same thing. They might not be nude, but they're showing, you know, women in skimpy bikinis, know, because that's what men look at. That's what catches your eye.
Right.
Movies. If they don't have a good looking woman in a movie, nobody's going to watch it.
Yeah. Talking about movies right now. Like I got mad the other night, like literally, like I want to just watch some movies on fucking whatever streaming is, whatever.
Yeah.
No matter what, it doesn't matter if it's a movie about, like, oh look, fucking this astronaut guy almost dies and his fucking wife. Doesn't matter what the fuck the movie's about. Sex in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I fucking get so pissed, dude. And my kids are like fucking magic little universal timers where they're like, and enters fucking 8-year-old. It's just all fucking bed hitting the wall, shit falling off. I'm like, son of a bitch.
You know what
though?
Like, that's life, you know? And yeah, I mean, that's the argument, you know? Like, when do you tell your kid about sex? When do you talk to them about the real world? You know, like, when do you teach them about bills? You know, I don't know. Like, that's up to each parent. But nowadays,
You better be aware and be ahead of the curve. I just would, you know, the wish. Like, you got to know what culture is going to do.
Just think about when you were 8. Did you already know about sex? Did you already know about, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that. That's the thing, you know?
I think about this, though. Like, there has to be this technology. You know, like, SoundHound has, like, digital audio tags. Like, it hears it and it knows, oh, that's that song, because this audio tag is repeating.
It's called a rating.
Form that you can't hear, right? No, a rating is fine, Brad. But what I'm saying is, I know we have smart enough technology that you could have a preset, like, parental filter. You can be like, set this motherfucker to PG-13, and they just tag the video at the spots where it's like, oh, the sex scene's not going to be there. And it can fucking beep when they say fuck.
Yeah.
If you want to set that shit to censor and hit it, that'd be cool. And that's not out of the fucking...
No, it's not.
No, that's no, that, entirely that's,
yeah,
possible.
And, yeah, it's definitely possible. I don't think control. I don't think it's necessary.
I know
at one
point...
I think there's a huge market for that shit.
Oh, there
I know is. At one point when Netflix, before they went all streaming and it was like just the CD rental,
right. There,
cause several of my students told me about this. They asked if they could rent their... I don't even remember what the service was called, but there was basically a Netflix that would do that. And they would edit a rated R movie to make it a PG movie, and then you would rent the PG version and get the discs. Yeah,
I mean, it's like you buy a CD at Walmart.
Came up in the corner to say, hey, you might want to pause this motherfucker for little kids in the room. If there was a known standardized color code that it was like language or, adult would come up in the corner, you'd be like, pause.
Hey. I just don't think it's necessary. I think I saw that when I was young. You saw that when you were young. Mm-hmm. Dave saw it when he was young. Everybody's fine.
Obviously,
everybody's fine. I mean, everybody grew up with it. Sex is a part of life. Cussing is a part of life. Yeah. If you either know when to use it or you don't, you're either smart and you can figure it out or you're a fucking idiot.
Right.
I mean, it's just how it is. If your kid's going to be stupid, they're going to be stupid. I'm sorry. Like if they're not and they're smart and you teach them, hey, don't call your mom an asshole.
But if the first naked girl you see is one chopped in half,
that's a different.
That turns you into a serial killer.
See, I don't know. He is an interesting guy. Like the history of him, the impact he had, etc. Like I said, at the very beginning, I think a lot of people just see him as this goofy old man in a robe walking around the mansion. But it's like look back at him, like you know, just like and I
there's a lot of stuff I did not know.
Him. Like just being a pioneer and fighting for all this stuff and always having to have his game on. But he was, you know, quite an impact. Love him or hate him, he had a massive impact on American culture.
And I have to say, you said, you know, you mentioned Sam Walton. Well, mm-hmm. Walmart was the one that censored all the CDs. So if you bought a CD from Walmart, it didn't have cussing on it. So, I mean, you mentioned the exact opposite of a man.
I'm saying give me the option.
Yeah. You're very prudeful, not on the show.
I'm just saying I wish there was an option so that I had a little bit of like sense of like confidence that there's not going to be a dick in a mouth in front of my 8-year-old kid. You know what I mean? I'd prefer not to. I'm not at that point yet. I want my 8-year-old kid to see that.
He's seen it already.
No, well, I don't know.
Yeah, motherfucker. The internet is a thing, and it's a hell of a thing.
Yeah. Who knows? Actually, yeah. Right now,
he's like, oh, dude.
He's trying to build the Assassin's Creed. What's it called? The Gauntlet.
He probably has some sort of dungeon in his Minecraft room, like that you don't know about.
Dude, he came. I walked out from my room from watching this fucking the Black Dahlia documentary. I walked out, and he had a like 4-foot piece of cardboard in the middle of the living room, scissors, Velcro, like tape, all this shit. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm building a gauntlet. I was like, what's that? He's like, oh, it's this thing that goes on your wrist. And then when you lift your wrist, a knife shoots out. And so you could stab when you punch. I was like, what? What? Let me see. And he showed me like the YouTube video and it's a plastic knife. But he found one of the switchblade combs and like made this whole fucking thing that he had strapped on his arm. Yeah. So violence might be a concern as well.
Right. Yeah. That's just
a little boy though.
Well, but I think that taps into a huge thing about the resistance that Hugh Hefner felt. I'll never forget. I mean, now the movie seems dated if you watch it, but I remember when the movie Starship Troopers came out and I went and saw it at the movie theater and it was one of the most violent movies that I had ever seen in my entire life. It's Paul Verhoeven directed it. He was a very violent director, very innovative director. But I remember sitting there and there was a family sitting right next to me and I mean, you know, giant.
Like, this is like Star Wars, right, honey? Yeah, it's just going to be just like Star Wars.
No, but here's
Star
the thing.
Wars.
Like, so the aliens are cutting people's fucking heads off, eviscerating. You see their guts. They're getting eaten alive. And there's two little kids. Like, it was mom, little kid, dad.
Yeah.
And they were fine with all of it. And the instant that it cut to the fucking shower scene, the co-ed shower scene.
Fucking arms over
the parents
eyes.
Fucking freaked up and covered up their eyes.
That is
I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you're willing to watch disembowelment and beheading. scenes yeah. and the most fucking
but not a shower,
but not a shower yeah. scene with some naked human body. I was just like, wow, welcome to America. Yeah. Like, we will fucking yeah. kill a motherfucker and look at his
watch
guts.
This ISIS member chop this guy's right, head off.
Exactly. But don't and look then, at a titty.
Yeah. So, oh right. no. Yeah. Don't like, see Janet Jackson.
Yeah.
Fuck no.
Yeah. Nip slip. Nope. Yeah. Like that. I think that's what he was fighting.
I made
yeah.
my kids watch Howard the Duck the other day.
Oh Jesus.
Cause there's a naked duck in it. He's like looking at like a naked duck magazine. So I was like, this is the line. I'm going to see what he does. And I was yeah. just like, hey, Max, come here. You want to see a naked duck? He's like, what are you talking about? Because he just thought like a duck. He's like, a duck never wears clothes, Dad. And then Berkeley's like, what are you doing, Dad? And I'm like, we're sitting there playing it. And then that, when Howard goes through the wall in the chair and there's a duck in the bathtub, because I remember from my childhood going, oh, my God, a naked duck. Like, I was all uncomfortable and shit because the duck had nipples. It's a duck with, like, feather titties. That's, you don't remember that?
I do. Oh, I remember.
That movie is horrible.
He was just all, oh, my so God, horrible. Dad. And he just walked out of the room. He's like, I can't believe you showed me that.
So yeah. horrible.
See, he didn't say, what's that? He knew already.
That's right.
He did,
see?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sponsor time, and then as usual, we'll have a couple of secrets just for our patrons.
You might have seen spark plugs for all I know, man. Could have happened.
Might have seen spark plugs. That's a new thing. Wishful thinking.
That's a new genre. Yeah. So thank you to El Yucateco Hot Sauce. You should put it on everything you eat. I've been missing it for 4.82 days right now, and I'm freaking out, man. You can't eat that. I can't eat anything that's not water.
Oh, just water.
Water,
just
and I had tea fast. This couple days. Yeah.
I'm interested to see how long you can go. You have good willpower, so I'm rooting for you, man. I am.
Earlier today, I felt like fucking. I can't get out of bed. I feel like shit. Yeah. Right now, I feel cool again. So
yeah,
that's the first time I felt bad. A couple of days, I felt fucking fabulous. To be honest, I felt great. I felt like super energized, but. We will see. But I'm dropping like 2 pounds a day, and it takes a lot to lose 2 real pounds like that.
Yeah.
So if I can just be tough and not eat, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Keep you updated.
We'll see next week. Yeah.
I don't know if next week, damn, how many days is that? That's like
seven days.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to do that. I'm shooting for 7. See how I feel on 7. If I get 7, I'll go 10.
If you get 7, you might as well go 10. If you get 10, you might as well go 14.
14
might as well go 21.
Then I might as well go 30, man.
30, you might as well just wait till you die.
Yeah.
Fuck it. I'm halfway dead already.
Yeah, 30. I could be an extra in the Auschwitz movie.
I think you could quite possibly break the world record.
Be amazing. No, the world record's 389 days.
Huh? Of not eating?
Yes. Water fast. 389 days.
No.
Yep. Look it up. Yeah, some Indian guy, I'm sure. Whoa. He must have started fat and finished skinny.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. Yeah, 389 days or something. Some guy in India.
That's bullshit.
But normal people on YouTube do hit like 60 days and shit. There's retreats like in Costa Rica where you can like take off and then you pay for them to starve you. Like
what
just
the fuck?
Well, because you're like in an environment where there is no food. There's medical care. Doctors look at you and check your vitals every day. They take blood levels and stuff and check like, you know, are you really okay?
Make sure you're all right.
Like I'm just winging it. I could have a heart attack. Right. I was like, I feel weird. Is that okay? Like in the shower, I was like,
my arm,
dude. In the shower, I got kind of sketched out. I was like, damn, my kids are gonna have to fucking come here and turn the hot water off me.
Well, and then they're gonna see a naked man. Yeah. I'd rather see the naked person on TV than the naked dad in the shower.
Right.
It's gonna be a memory that you can't forget.
Speaking of me naked, thank you, El Yucateco Hot Sauce. You can be found in most major grocery stores, Target, Walmart, Amazon, fucking eBay. Maybe someone has on Etsy. I don't know. But if you buy it from their website, you can save some money with Soap King.
You kept saying that. I kept thinking you could buy you naked on Walmart, Amazon. Like, that's all I could. It was in my head. I'm like, what is happening right now? Are you even talking about the right shit?
Yeah. Maybe I'll leak some pictures and you can buy it. Thank you to printdirtcheap.com. You can buy all kinds of sticky shit, printed shit, banners, flyers, posters, whatever you want. They'll print it as long as it's not copyrighted. Thank you to...
You're mad about that still, huh?
I just want to make what I want to make. I'm going to have to find some third-party shady place on the internet.
Yep.
And then...
China, baby. China.
Yeah, they'll do it.
Print Dirt Cheap. We'll get around you.
Yeah.
Don't worry about this.
Thank you to Dark Side Graphics. Wow, I said Dark Side Graphics. What's up, Kevin Brewster? How you been, man? It's the X thing. It's fucking me up, man. Thank you to Daily Own. It's a D and graphics. Thank you to Daily Own Graphics. If you haven't sent him a dick pic, you should, but he'd probably like titty pics if you sent those there too. You can find him on Facebook and or Instagram at Daily Own Graphics with an X. He does screen printing. So, and on a real note, he can print t-shirts and koozies and pretty much whatever you want to put on screen print. So hit them up if you need something like that. Thank you to Digital Creations for our coffee mugs. And thank you to Dan Camarillo Jiu-Jitsu. You can log into armhunter.com. And if you're in Bakersfield, you can go choke people and pay him to choke people. So he does sell instructional DVDs and apparel on his website as well. If you see him, tell him I will board short sword fight him any day. Hands behind my back. Traditional rules, no pills. And no I ain't pills. Afraid. Yeah, no pills.
All right.
That's huge. And on that note, cue the tree of trust nest music because it's secret confession time.
It is secret confession time. I have a secret confession for a Patreon member. And by the way, if you want a secret confession to you, all you have to do is go to /something or other Patreon, yada, yada, and give us money.
Also, you know, we haven't mentioned a long time as our web store. I haven't gotten a lot of orders lately. I'm getting little orders here and there, but we do have 2 new shirts in the works, 4 whiskey glasses, decanters, and coasters. Like nice shit coming. It's on the way. As soon as everything's here, we're going to roll it out all together. And we're going to, I guess we're going to burn through that last stuff. Right. So
yeah. We're not doing anything of the old, we're going to burn through it. Like so whatever's left is left. If there's no sweaters, there ain't no sweaters.
Yeah. People keep asking about sweatshirts. And if you are a patron right now, like if you haven't got your shirt, it's just not printed yet. Which says right on there, like it's a kid take 4 weeks to get that shit done. But we usually get it done a lot faster. They're in print. When you order those, we print them 2 size. We don't carry those things. So we appreciate your patience. It does take a little while, but I keep getting messages. Where's my shirt? It's not made yet. But this week I'm going to be mailing out.
We send out batches. We can't just send one at a time.
Yeah.
I think like 40 shirts are getting sent out this week probably. Yeah. So I almost have those. And if you got your gift at 20 to 40, which people started posting those. If you could please take a picture and brag about it, you pay big money for bragging rights. So go ahead and brag.
So if you are named Daniel Longhorn, stick it on.
I have a Christina Hathaway. So I'm going to be telling you my secret in a little bit here. So stick around.
I have Michael Porch and P. Grande.
It sounds like a Taco Bell meal.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
P. Grande.
Who wants to start secrets? Okay, so the rest of you, peace out. Thanks for listening. Go away. Now we're in the secret.
All right, I'll go first if you want. So Christina Hathaway. This one's kind of embarrassing. I struggled with whether I was going to let this one out or not. Like, you know, last week I did a couple.
We'd come around.
They weren't really embarrassing.
We'd come around.
I'm struggling with it. It's embarrassing because you guys are going to judge the fuck out of me.
Anybody judging here? This is the tree of trust. This is the womb of happiness.
This is the womb of happiness.
Sometimes
I got him.
When my family's not home, I do some stuff, you know, that I'm not so proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to sound weird. I'm not sure what order I should go in, but
do you shame your body?
No, it's just a ritual that I do. It's kind of innocent. It's just a guilty pleasure, and it's really weird. But what I do is I turn on Miley Cyrus Wrecking Ball and I put it on repeat and I sit. The first thing I do is eat Cheerios, an entire box out of a salad bowl, like with a big ass spoon. Like that's some Brad Knightley shit. He eats 3 packs of Top Ramen and mixes up the flavors and shit. But
I'm on a diet.
I eat a whole, like when I go to the store to get Cheerios, I end up buying an extra box and I hide that
for
shit.
You,
so they don't know that I keep it in my car.
You family size for
and
yourself.
And I know that when they're not going to be home, I'm like, all right, it's Miley Cyrus day. And so I get my box of Cheerios out of the car. I go in the house. I lock the front door. I get undressed down to my underwear, put on Miley Cyrus on repeat, and I eat Cheerios. And I just keep fucking eating Cheerios. And then sometimes if I'm feeling it, I dance to it. And no one sees it.
Out of rhythm. Yeah.
To this day, my family thinks I can't dance, but they have no idea what crazy Napoleon Dynamite shit goes
on. What if you're out bowling and that shit comes on?
Dude, I tap my foot, I nod my head, and then like my wife's like, how do you know the words of this? And I'm just like, yeah, that's on in the car, you know, the radio shit.
So the thing I need to clarify is are you listening to the song on repeat or are you watching the video?
It's a little of both. I'll be honest. Everybody got down on Miley for that turkey butt picture with those underwear over butt, but I'm kind of into it, dude.
Yeah,
that weird. Those
you
weird
do like
videos,
birds.
It's a pigeon thing. It does.
Yeah.
It's a little bird bump.
Yeah. Everybody said turkey, and you were thinking pigeon. Bump,
I'm down. I celebrate her entire collection, just in secret.
Miley's good. I listen to the 23 though, the hip hop to the hippity hop version.
So, hip hop anonymous.
The hip hop.
Why do you give him all the easy ones?
Yeah.
Does anyone know what that is? Somewhere out there they do.
You want me to go or you want to go two in a row? What do you want to do?
I'll go one and then you can go and then I'll do the last one. So I'll do this one to Pagrande. So I was trying to think of something.
Call him Granddaddy P.
Yeah. So, well, okay. I'll do a, I mean, not really a secret. I guess it's a confession, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, a while back, I mentioned that I was watching, I don't remember what documentary it was, but whatever it was, it was a murder documentary, I remember. And it was, you know, all the murder photos and the murder and all that shit. And I said I'd masturbated to it. Everybody thought I was joking. I wasn't.
That was Dahmer.
Maybe it was. Yeah. It was Dahmer. Very strange. Yeah. That. It was really weird. I don't know. So today I was watching the Hefner documentary and I'm like, is it like the documentary thing? Like, is nobody home? And is it thing?
I'm starting
and
I'm to like, documentary. Yeah. Fetish.
Well, no, no. Not really.
You're aroused and you were trying to figure out
why. No. I wasn't aroused. Like the Playboy thing wasn't really like, I don't know. It just didn't do it for me.
Well, you said you like to watch now, and but that was just another twist.
Black Dahlia, on the other hand.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it does it. I don't know. I don't know why.
Well, to each his own, but I think that's. There are some lines in the sand, but whatever you do in your own house.
Right.
Yeah, whatever, Cheerio boy. So
that's Cheerios and Miley Cyrus. It's like,
hey, guys, this is the womb of happiness. This is
There's no judge. I'm not judging. I'm sorry. I'm not judging.
Yeah, he was worried about us, and now I'm getting persecuted over here.
No judgment.
Like Judas.
No, I was just trying to look at it from a global perspective and see what the world would think.
I'm a serial killer.
I'm not personally judging you.
I'm not killing anybody. I'm just, I don't know.
It might be a gateway.
It is a weird thing. I don't know if anybody else out there, if you're listening, because I know you guys are cheating. I know Dave doesn't think so. But yeah, like I think that there's a thing with the murder thing. Like that's why people are so into it. I don't know. I necessarily wasn't, and I still am not like obsessed about it. But when you do the shows, like the murder ones are like the, I don't know.
But what happens at home? You start putting ketchup on your girl. Like you got to do some weird shit.
Yeah.
You're drawing lipstick, fucking smiles on her. You know?
I mean, you know.
You're making her do a back bend and hide her head under the pillow.
Okay. Here's
it's conditioned response. I ring that bell when we laugh and something.
Here's my secret. This is for Daniel Longhorn and Daniel Longhorn only. You guys both confessed of some high school shenanigans on the last episode, and it reminded me of a high school shenanigan. It really wasn't a shenanigan, I guess, but when I was in high school, in my senior year, a lot of times in the winter, myself and a good friend of mine named Mike would skip school. I mean, I would skip school all the fucking time because I was a horrible student.
I only skipped one class one
Jesus
time,
Christ,
dude.
Yeah. I skipped all the time.
I never skipped.
But every so often, and his father was like a prominent member of the community and so forth. They had a lot of money and we would skip and we would just hang out at his house. He would drink. I didn't drink at the time, but he would drink and we would both sit in the hot tub and just hang out during the school day. And it was during the winter. And
he drank beer or like hard alcohol.
He drank whatever he could get his hands on.
Damn.
But we would get out and see how long you could be in like Michigan winter in the snow.
Ooh, that's dangerous.
Just out of a hot tub. And we would kind of walk around and you wouldn't be cold or whatever. And then you'd kind of start to get cold and you get back on the hot tub and we would kind of do that back and forth. And at one point,
you guys are naked, right?
Yeah, this sounds like it could get sexual.
No. Trust me, this is not sexual.
I'm getting disappointed already.
We had bathing suits on the whole sexual. Deal.
Did you let the water jet hit your butthole, though?
That's kind of where it's going. No, I didn't. The water jet didn't hit my butthole, but just the contrast between the extreme cold of the Michigan winter and the hot of the hot tub. On one of the re-entries into the hot tub, mm-hmm. I felt
is the
like
hot tub a metaphor for your friend's anus.
I felt like I had to fart. Like I got back in and my like I was trying to hold in this fart and I knew I could, and it was just like the shock of the heat.
Were the bubbles on though?
And the bubbles were on. Yeah. Oh, and I just on, I just let it go. And as soon as I let it go, I was like, I don't think that was a fart.
Oh, shit your pants so in the hot tub.
I'm sitting there
in the hot tub time machine.
And I couldn't really tell because like I'm halfway numb from being in the cold. So I couldn't really feel anything on my ass anyway. And I'm sitting there and I'm just wondering, did I just let something go or was it just gas? Sure, and I'm sitting there and I'm playing it off. And God is my witness, sitting there maybe 5 minutes later, I spied a piece of corn floating in the hot tub.
Oh my
and it
God.
Was the only thing, it was the only particulate matter. And I played it off and acted like it wasn't there. And I don't know if Mike ever saw it, but I suspect that at least a kernel of corn came out of my ass
as
a reaction of the hot cold.
Did you ever do that? Did you ever do it again after that? Did you ever go into the hot tub again with him?
Yes.
Okay, so he probably didn't spot it because that would have been a fucking, you'd have been in the no
that
hot
water
tub
did
guy.
Get changed, but I mean, there's chlorine in there.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in there.
Oh, so yeah, there is.
That's my secret.
Dude, I had a
clean
friend.
Clean the float out.
I told this story.
Turd in there.
I told this story before. I had a friend that does those things called butt Yodas. So he could like lay on his back on the floor and he could suck air in his butt. It'd be all.
That's
like that, and then you'd be all.
It's unnatural.
That sounds more like a butt R2-D2.
He could like queef, like he could suck air in his butt and then fart. He has some crazy butt. Same guy that could pee over his shoulder, but there were stories.
He had a dynamic butthole.
And I never witnessed this, but there were also stories that he would do at this someone's house. He would pull his pants down, stick his butthole up to the jet in the jacuzzi, and it would like push water in his butt, and then he would lift
That's
up out of
enema.
The thing. And then just squirt water out of
dolphin
his ass.
Squirt it?
Yeah, like dolphins squirt it. Like a fountain, like a little cherub fountain. He would squirt water back out of his butt onto the deck and then go back down and squirt water out of his butt onto the deck.
Oh, yeah. Man.
How do you even find out you could do that?
I don't know.
That's playing a, with that's the Jets.
It's a talented anus.
Yeah.
Jesus
That's the same
Christ.
Guy that came to work one day. I was like the manager at PetSmart and he came to work. He's like, dude, I fucked a cantaloupe last night. It was amazing. I was like, what? He's like, I swear to God, dude. He's like, you have to try it. He's like, I just cut a hole in the cantaloupe and then I put it in the microwave, but you got to check it first.
Yeah.
And then, he fucked the cantaloupe and he said it was like, it was just like the real thing, dude.
Like, it was just like fucking a real melon.
Yeah, it's like fucking a cantaloupe, dude.
I was like, I cannot believe you did that. And I really can't believe you told me that. Yeah.
So speaking of fucking cantaloupes, what's your...
You didn't go yet.
I already went.
No.
Did you? What was yours?
It was
the Cheerios?
Yeah, Cheerios, Wrecking Ball.
So yours is the yours is. You have
I don't know.
One.
I'm thinking.
You're supposed to be thinking while Dave was telling.
I know.
Story.
I was listening. It was interesting. I thought I was going to get to anal
corn kernel
sex. So this is to Michael Porch Monkey, or Michelle Porch Monkey, one or the other. Man,
first initial M, last name Porch.
Yeah, and middle name Monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Porch Monkey, that funky monkey.
Yeah.
Dave's getting my star, Dave. I don't know. I was thinking of something. I'm trying to think of something that's good. I do got, okay. I don't think I ever told this on the show.
Break it out.
Even if you did, it was episode 32. And
yeah, maybe. Fools,
they don't go back that far.
I don't think I did. I think I, maybe. Did I say about the pickles at the school store?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay. I'm hungry.
Okay. So at my high school, this was junior year, I think. So junior year. Junior year. Me and another guy worked in the student store before the student store was open. So we'd stock it.
Right.
Store, you know.
Right.
Fucking fill everything up, you know. Go to the storeroom, get all the shit, fill it all up. You know, put the bags of chips in there and everything.
You pissed in the pickles. I fucking know it. Go ahead.
So...
I know it.
So, I'll even say his name too, cause I don't know him anymore. So I'll put him on blast. Alan Fitzpatrick.
Damn. Full name.
So if you look
him
up
on Facebook, right now.
So, going in there and this, he had to piss really, really, really bad. And, he's like, you dare me to piss in the pickle jar? And I didn't say anything. And he's like, okay. And he's fucking pisses in the pickle jar.
Fine, I'll do it.
It's like pisses one of in the
those,
pickle
like,
jar.
I'm, it's like the one big, of those big ass.
The big pickle jar that you, huge, you take the tongs to get, okay, you know, the kids come up and they want a pickle. Yep. And they, you know, so it's like, and there's like 15, 20 jars of pickles. I don't even know how many, but they're the big plastic containers. They got the big ass pickles in them. And so he pisses in a pickle jar, seals it back up, and fucking moves it to the back, right? That's junior year. Senior year comes along. I still work in the student store because it's like one of the, you know, one of your classes, right. You know, and I didn't have any other classes. So I was doing that and it's easy and you get discount on student store stuff. So, we're doing it. And, the pickles apparently are hot sellers and they have ran through all of those jars of pickles in the last year and a half or whatever. And we go to get pickles and the last jar is sitting there. And I know what happened to that jar. Nobody else but me and him know what happened to that jar. So, but we need pickles in the student store. So I put pickles in the student store. And I proceeded to watch girls come up and order their favorite snack for lunch.
Oh, man.
Pickles. And eat them. That's and yet they were so good, they were coming back and buying more.
How much did he pee in there?
A lot. Like, I mean, you know, when you got to piss.
He let it go? Yeah. Oh, that's fucked up, man. Well, you know what? I bet you couldn't tell. I bet it's like briny and salty probably.
Yeah, I mean, it probably made him extra good apparently because they were like, this is the best pickle I ever had.
Oh, no.
Get another one. Yeah.
Pickles is one of the first things I'm going to eat even after that story.
Jesus Christ. Don't fucking eat something.
So.
Yeah. Not yet. So. You made me think about high school food, dude. All I can think about is hot ham and cheese, sprinkle cookies, and a Gatorade in a can.
We always had the
taco salads. Frito boats. We didn't have Frito boats. We had taco salads, baked potatoes. Why am I doing this? I'm done. I'm not talking about food anymore. Fuck. Yeah. No more food talk.
So yeah. So anyway.
All right.
That's it.
That's our
thank you, patrons that are still listening. Yep. We appreciate it. Thank you for. Signing up for patronage.
Yep.
Is that it?
I think so.
All right. Till next time, don't be a retard.
Drink more water. Or you might die. '79 King Drive, you could picture me rolling. Been the corners, we was headed to the roster. Nigga been blessed, but a nigga been sick and a nigga been stressed. So fuck it, I'm a doctor, self-medicated. Ginger ale and the champagne flutes and I ain't celebrating. Cooking up crack, repeating Texas everything till I'm waiting till I played it. Patience, I'm faded, like outdated denim. Hearing it like this, about as rare as cicadas. The boy got some Miles Davis in him, talking all that jazz. Telling all that truth, nigga, talk your shit. Better watch your mouth, better watch your back. Better choose the right way, I'm supporting the road shit. And of course, the path less traveled. Fuck, I look like following your footsteps. Don't fumble, cause this ain't Sunday football. I ain't at home with a footrest. In fact, I'm in front of the back of your head, but I'm coming from behind. Better look left, like where the fuck is he? You got time on your head, boy. You got time on your head, like you wearing buck 50. Do it so clean, but it's still so filthy. Fuck with it, cause you already know you fuck niggas really can't talk talking all that jazz. Talking all that jazz, telling all that truth. Nigga, talk your shit, nigga, talk your shit. Talking all that jazz. Talking all that jazz, telling all that truth. Nigga, talk your shit, nigga, talk your shit. Talking all that jazz. Talking all that jazz, telling all that truth. Nigga, talk your shit, nigga, talk your shit. Talking all that jazz might get you pop, but I ain't gon' stop, don't ask. Until I'm in a white drop top with a smile on my face and a hand in the air like JFK. Wait, all in your steam. Better known as a hot box, crack rocks in the square. Better known as a block impaired, trying to move, that's hopscotch. Unfair, one leg is a hell of a cock block. My nigga, what an anomaly. My nigga, look at the world, my nigga, what a monopoly. Drop tops in the hood and they sitting on 22s. Nigga still on Section 8 though. Tricking on the low for a hoe, nigga. Mama at the crib trying to stretch a couple pesos. Couldn't paint a pretty picture with the tears and the makeup. Better get Mako. Makeovers help niggas make money, but I'ma always talk that James Moody. Most rappers these days is actors, and I can't keep watching the same movie. These niggas keep sharing the same models, and these models act like they ain't groupies. I ain't stupid. Talking Duke Ellington, Cal Basie, Monk, and Dave Brubeck. I ain't stupid. Talking too eloquent, I ain't stuttered, my nigga. I ain't Ruben. Ginger ale for the hoes and champagne flutes. Tell one of them come pour me a glass. She don't act up, she can get this truth. Tell her ass, read that while I wrote this joint. back, nigga tryna relax. This shit don't stop, I ain't tryna relapse to that whack bullshit. Niggas better evac when I drop, cause I swear that this black man ain't talking all that jazz. Talking all that jazz, telling all that truth. Nigga talk your shit, nigga talk your shit. Talking all that jazz. Talking all that jazz, telling all that truth. Nigga talk your shit, nigga talk your shit. Talking all that jazz. Talking all that jazz, telling all that truth. Nigga talk your shit, nigga talk your shit. Talking all that jazz might get you popped, but I ain't gon' stop, don't ask. Until I'm in a white drop top with a smile on my face and a hand in the air like JFK. Charlie Parker, that Charles Mingus, that Frank Sinatra, talking all that jazz, talking all that jazz, that Coltrane, that Charlie Parker, that Charles Mingus, Frank Sinatra, talking all that jazz, talking all that jazz.